Ya lo hace. Pierna derecha, directo al arco. ¡Golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Monday, August 20th, 2018. Josef Martinez scored his 27th goal yesterday to tie the record for Roy Lasseter, Chris Wondolowski, and Bradley Wright Phillips. But first of all, good morning, Dwayne.
Good morning from it's fall-like Toronto. It's starting to feel like the weather's turning.
It's summer Montreal. It's going to be 30-something degrees today. So, yeah, I'll take my weather over yours.
It's heading your way. Don't worry. Don't worry at all. But, no, it's kind of like it's exciting, though, because the fall is when a lot of things start. We're going to be talking to Travis Clark later in the week about college soccer. It's not our favorite sport on here, but we do give it a little bit of time. So that's sort of a sign of the fall. And the leaves will start turning soon enough in the parts of the world where it does. And, hey.
It's funny you say it's not our favorite, like, part of the sport, college, but it's a tradition now. I think it's the fifth straight year we have Travis Clark late August, early September, to talk about college soccer, and it'll be interesting because more and more there's an evolution to college soccer, academies, and all that, so it's a great conversation we have on a yearly basis with Travis of Top Drawer Soccer, so that's going to be interesting later this week. But let's start with the headline that I was mentioning earlier today. Well, yeah, today. Josef Martinez scored his 27th goal. Not surprised at all, Dwayne, by his goal-scoring abilities. We knew he was going to beat the record. Well, tie the record. He's going to beat it probably next weekend. But, yeah, what's there to say? 27 goal, all great goals, great prolific scorer, and his stats in the weekend. One goal, one assist, and 100% passing accuracy. Not too shabby for Martinez. Dwayne is on mute, I believe, but should be right there in a second. Dwayne, there you go.
Yes, there you go. Sorry. So this is some connection issues we're having lately. But no, what can you say about Martinez? He's a perfect poacher in every way. And that fits that team very well. And I mean, a lot of people will sort of dismiss poach goals because they'll say, oh, they scored from 5 feet. Well, they got to get to that place. They got to know the runs. They got to understand all of the positioning that's going on out there. So he is a key component to what is the MLS Cup favorite at this particular point in the season. I'm not afraid to say that out loud. And they did it in 2 years. It's got to be impressed with what Atlanta's done, even though we're all a little sick of Atlanta invented soccer, just like we were a little sick of Seattle invented soccer. But the truth is they have created a very special team very quickly.
And for me, the stats of 100% passing accuracy is quite impressive. Yes, the team itself and the play of the players themselves help get that stats. And if you look at just compared to Chicago, okay, I was watching Chicago and Montreal on the weekend, and it's quite the opposite. For me, Chicago is really static, and that's one thing Atlanta is not. You know, you're on ball possession, you have the ball, you look at your options for passing, you look at your teammates. If they're static and just waiting for the ball, guess what? The ball's not going to get there, and that's Chicago in a nutshell versus Atlanta. And I know it's the two opposite spectrum of the Eastern standings. But when you look at Atlanta, they're always fluid, always in motion, always ready to not just receive the pass, but transition the pass either into a run, either into a teammate. And that is impressive to me. And 100% passing accuracy for Josef Martinez explains a bit of that great tactic or great just fluid, the motion of the ball that Tata Martino was able to instill on those players over the last 2 years.
No, precisely. And look, we wondered whether he would be able to adopt to MLS and adopt to having lesser-like players out there. And there was no question. Quickly into his tenure, we were able to see that he did. And sort of him, along with Vieira, sort of finally put the final nail in the coffin of the trope that European managers can't, or not European in this case, but non-American answers,
foreign,
managers can't adapt to Major League Soccer. It's a load of silliness. You have to have someone on your team to help you understand and navigate the MLS rules for sure, but there's ways around that. Once you're out there, you know, training and managing and teaching, it's the same job. Whether you're in Chile or whether you're in Japan or whether you're in, you know, Atlanta.
Yeah, it's very impressive. And then let's take a look at the other side of that spectrum. I alluded to it, Chicago. Paunovic's team is struggling. 8 straight defeat. And we'll get to the Montreal side of that game in the Canadian Review a bit later. But I wanted to talk to you about Bastian Schweinsteiger. I feel bad for the 2014 World Cup champion. Starting for the third time this season at center back. 4 minutes in, he tackles Tider in the box. Penalty. And all along the game itself, Schweinsteiger was targeted by Montreal's players, or was taken advantage of with his defensive difficulties in this game, and Montreal were able to get the late winner. Yes, first ever goal by Daniel Lovitz. But for me, what I remember, what I take out of this game is the lack of tactic, the lack of pride, the lack of awareness of spatial awareness on the field. Know where you are, know where your teammates are. There's a lot of different moments where Raheem Edwards trying to get to a ball and he just puts himself in the wrong place around the ball to literally stifle his own progress with the ball, and then there's too much help players on him. There's nothing he could do. Same thing happened all game long. And you know what I remembered 80 minutes in? I'm like, oh yeah, they have Dax McCarty. Where has he been? Where was he in the last 80 minutes? It's that kind of stretch for Chicago, Dwayne, and the second city itself. They deserve better in a soccer team. No offense, Bridgeview, but why not go back to Soldier Field? Anyways, and there was rumblings on the press box, Dwayne, that if Chicago was going to lose this one, Paunovic might be out of a job by the end of the week. And we'll see. There's a very possibility this happens, especially when the coach himself says after the game, stop asking me about the losing streak. Don't you see we're effing suffering?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long time. Remember that hot start they had in the first half of last year? The Fire did it. It propelled them into a playoff spot for the first time in several years. And a lot of people, I think, just had wishful thinking about this being the turnaround that they, because they badly want Chicago to be a successful market. It reminds me, here's your Bengal card moment. It reminds me of the Blackhawks back before they got really, really good, is that they had this market in the United States in hockey that just was this huge market that just couldn't perform. And then when they did, it really helped that league, I think, get a greater foothold in the United States than it did, you know, 10 or 12 years ago. So I think this is a similar thing here. It's the second city. It's the third largest city in America, fourth largest city in the league, and they just need it to go. They need it to fly, and it's invisible in what is a very important market. Like I said, they had a good start to last season, but if you look at their play from the midpoint of last season through to now, over a full year, calendar year, they've been horrendous. They've been terrible. They're just poorly built, and there's just not much there. And Schweinsteiger, I mean, I was saying to you off air that what I see in him right now is very much reminding me of Torsten Frings at the end in Toronto, where Torsten Frings went further and further back to the point he was playing sweeper at the end, right? Yeah. And literally playing sweeper. It was a terrible team, and part of that was just by necessity. But he didn't have the speed. He didn't have the foot speed. He didn't have the athleticism anymore. And this was a I know a lot of our American listeners don't like Torsten Frings because of the handball, but put that aside for a second and realize that this is a World Cup, not winner, but competed at the highest level in the World Cup, played in World Cup medal games, and was an elite player for a long time. And by the time he got to the end in MLS, it was just sad. He was slow and humbled, right? And that's, I don't know, Schweinsteiger's quite that bad, but similar. They're moving further back, and he's getting exposed. He's getting found out.
Yeah. 34 years old, though, right? He was 33 when he came in last year, just turned 34 a few months ago. And when you look at Schweinsteiger, he feels like an old 34 years old. Like, he feels like he aged about 3-4 years since last year. And I think he starts to regret his choice of saying he's staying in MLS for a second year. He's not going to say so. And he even mentioned after the game that he still believes Valko Paunovic and his staff are doing a good job and they have good players. So at this point, I'm starting to question his judgment.
Yeah, I mean, we questioned it when he came in, and then he had an okay start. But again, I think everything that we're just a little bit blinded by that first half of last year. I don't know if anyone's blinded by it anymore, but we were last year at this point. We were talking about, oh, maybe we underestimated, et cetera, et cetera. No, really, it's catching up with them now. And where do they go from here? I mean, what does Chicago do?
Not a lot. Chicago is literally, not mathematically, but I believe that they're out of playoff contention. With DC that hot, DC won their third game this week. 9 points and nine possible points. DC is now eighth in the Eastern Conference standings, only 6 points behind, not even, only 4 points behind Montreal. So this is getting really tight, and even for Toronto, we'll get their Nikkinen review, it's getting difficult. But for Chicago, they're not mathematically eliminated yet, but the lack of, pardon the pun, of fire shown by this team, the lack of passion on the field, and the lack of commitment late in the game, and you can see that goal in the extra time period, this is going to have this is going to leave some traces for the rest of the season, and we'll see. I'm almost certain that Paunovic will not be back next year. Now the question is he finishing the season?
Yeah, I mean, you got to ask yourself a question of what the point is when you're to fire a coach midseason, really. But it's what's it going to accomplish?
And just to add to your point, Wayne, Chicago is not like Chicago is the Vancouver Whitecaps of the United States side of MLS, where they're close to their wallet, right? So I doubt that they'll fire Paunovic this week, having to pay a second coach for the rest of the season, unless they just name an assistant an interim, which is possible, and then you don't necessarily have to pay two head coach salaries. But this is actually part of the equation if I'm Chicago, that they're that close to their money right now.
Yeah, you give someone, you know, an extra $5,000 as opposed to hiring another coach for whatever, $500,000, right? So it's, I don't know what MLS coaching salaries are, to be honest with you, because they're not released. But I suspect that, yeah, bringing in someone that they would actually make a difference would cost you some money. And you're right. Are they going to do that? Questions. They got to get rid of Schweinsteiger at this point, clearly. And I think they probably will. I mean, there's not much point in that. They're back to square one. I mean, they had a little bump last year. Helped a little bit of attendance there for the while, but now it's back to the norm. I mean, it didn't really help the attendance that much either. You remember his first game, there was a big crowd there, and then the second game, it was kind of back to the normal, right?
First game, Dwayne, people were like, oh, yeah, let's go see Schweinsteiger. And on the second game, like, yeah, do we really need to go to Bridgeview? Do we really need to spend an hour in the train and the bus and the public transit system or drive all across town? If you're from the north side of Chicago, trying to get to Bridgeview, it's like an hour and a half drive if you're lucky, if you don't catch any traffic. And yeah, I think that's what people realize after the first game. I'm like, oh yeah, that's why I wasn't going, not because of the team, because of the rest of the stadium and the location.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with it, it's not only is it on the south side, that doesn't even do it justice. It is practically out of this, well, it is out of the city. It's might as well be, you know, to put a Toronto example on it, it'd be like being in Oakville or Montreal.
Even further, like I would say Hamilton almost.
Yeah, it's not quite the great analogy, because the other part of it too is, and I don't want to get into socioeconomic stuff here, but you're driving through, if you drive in city, it's a rough part of town that you're driving through too. It's you know, Bridgeville itself is fine, but it's kind of nothing. It's just a stop on a highway, really. Like, there's not much there at all. Like, there's no real, you have to tailgate because there's no restaurants or pubs or anything around it. I mean, it was Peter Wilt would admit this, that he liked the stadium, you know, and it's getting older now, but he likes the stadium itself. But the actual location, that was the biggest mistake they made, for sure.
It was supposed to revitalize that part of town. It was supposed to be built all around and have hotels and restaurants, and, you know, often this is a case for a stadium in a city. Yeah, it's going to it never does. It's going to revitalize. It doesn't. It won't. And it's never going to happen. And I have to say, waiting for a cab at Bridgeview was one of the longest experiences I had last year when I was there. Is you're waiting. You're looking around. You don't even know how to get into the parking lot to the stadium. It's not. There's no signs. There's no signage proper. It's not necessarily the best way. Where do you come in? Where do you come out? Then there's rats crossing your path when you're in the stadium. Yeah, that was my experience at Bridgeview, and maybe it's just my bias, but that was my experience. So it's not an easy part of town, and it's not an easy stadium to get to. But we'll see how this shakes up. With DC United revitalizing their season, more than their season, it's literally revitalizing the club with a new stadium. And it's funny, Dwayne, you had Robert Kraft and his son walking the pitch yesterday at Audi Field, maybe taking notes to maybe potentially, who knows, I doubt it will ever happen, but have a soccer, quote-unquote, specific stadium for the Revolution.
Yeah, well, I believe that when it happens. But for sure, I guess the only way you can speak to these things from an ownership perspective is to, you know, show you the money, show me the money, right? Like, that's what it has to come down to. And so maybe he looks at this and says, okay, well, maybe if I spend 30 million, which is nothing in his mind, or 50 million even, then I might be able to actually make some money off of this charity thing that I do with this team. And that would be great. But a downtown stadium for Boston would be, you know, combined with a rebrand, because I think that the Revolution at this point would need to be Boston FC or something for them to really truly have a second chance. But because you only get one chance at a first impression, so rebrand, move downtown, and I give that franchise a chance. Otherwise, they're, you know, the Foxborough 96ers, really, right? And they're kind of just floundering around.
And just to finish with DC before we take a small break and move to the Canadian Review. Audi Field, now it's packed. There's atmosphere now. There's a true sense of accomplishment with the amount of years it took for this stadium to be built up. The start and go aspect of a few different stadium iteration, and it's finally done. It's finally there, and you see the attendances. You see the fans are more excited now that the majority of the troubles between supporters and the front office has been dealt with. Now you see the difference. Remember watching DC at RFK? Yeah, there was about a few thousand fans, and you can probably name them, and it was mostly supporters group. Things have changed a bit, and some of it is Rooney, some of it is the stadium itself built it, and they could or should come.
Yeah, well, that's always what they say. It is. DC does have a significant core of fan within that team that had been staying away for a lot of reasons. And in their particular case, this gives them an opportunity to revitalize them. And then they bring Rooney in, which is going to give them a few new fans coming in. So this is really, you know, other than the rebrand, and it would be a shame to rebrand DC United, because it is, you know, as much as MLS has an iconic brand, it's DC United, right? And the Galaxy, too, in their own weird way, are kind of MLS. And you wouldn't ever want to see those names go away. But they're as iconic to me as, you know, any of the NASL old names, right, at this point, because they've been around for a long time. However, other than that, this is pretty much a complete rebrand from the start. This is one of those 96 teams getting a second chance, and we're seeing all. We're talking about, this has been a theme of this year, talking about the 96 problems, and attendance is one, right? And that's because they just didn't have that chance to make the big boom into the market, and in the markets that they're in, the original teams. It's ironic. It's the opposite of other leagues. They're the worst off because they turned off a lot of their core audience in the early days because they were playing, you know, soccer, S-A-W-K-E-R, and they, you know, had weird rules, and they had, you know, crazy uniforms and stupid names and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, the Euro snob, bluntly, turned their nose up on it, and they've never gone back because they still view that the product is second rate. Whereas you go into an Atlanta or whatever, and we've talked about this before, obviously, but just quickly, they have a fresh start. People are like, this is new, this is fun, I want to be part of this too. I look at all these supporter groups, and they buy in, and they don't worry about, like, analyzing whether, you know, this team is a League One or the championship or whatever. Like, they don't get into those debates. They just enjoy it for what it is. And, you know, that started to turn around in about TFC coming in, and that's moving forward from there. The teams have been able to launch with that, without that baggage. And 96 problems and attendance is one. That's going to be the theme. We can maybe make a bumper for that. But we have some copyright issues, probably.
Yeah, Jay-Z's pretty harsh on copyright, so maybe not. Like, I don't want to be sued. But, yeah, speaking of TFC, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll do the Canadian Review. We'll talk about Montreal, Toronto, and Vancouver in the weekend.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at @SoccerTodaySPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. Dwayne Rollins with myself, Kevin Larame. You can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute and myself at Kev Larame. Let's start with the first game involving a Canadian club on Saturday. Vancouver Whitecaps, the New York Red Bulls, 2-2. Yes, there was a red card to New York, but didn't really change the go-around of this game. 2-2 for Vancouver. Is it a good result in your mind, Dwayne, for Vancouver, a team that's, I wouldn't say floundering, but a team that has some difficult time, a good win in Portland last week, and you find yourself now tying one of the best team in the league, 2-2 with the Red Bulls. Is this enough? Is that a good result for Vancouver?
Yes and no. I mean, I think that Vancouver is the case now, like Montreal and especially like Toronto, where they kind of need to get all the points they can at the end, since we're going in chronological order here, because they are only 3 points back of that playoff spot right now. And although the points per game is significant there, they you know are still in with the shout, and they needed to bounce back from the terrible midweek performance against Toronto, and they did to a certain extent. Now that said, when you're up a man, you want to take full advantage of that and get the 3 points they weren't able to. And you know, what'd you say, Carl Robinson's all-time record still remains exactly 500, right? So that's
76. 76-53. That's Robbo's all-time record coaching Vancouver Whitecaps. So 2-2 for Vancouver. So it's a bit of a status quo in their race for a playoff spot. There's around 8 to 10 to 11 games playing for the rest of the team in the conferences, depending on which team. So it'll be something to keep an eye on. Now, let's move to Montreal. Montreal with a late goal. Daniel Lovitz is first ever professional goal for a player that played from anywhere from striker to midfielder, attacking wise, defensive midfielder, and since last year, left back. This player has finally scored a goal, and in the words of Rémi Gall, the head coach of Montreal Impact, he discovered that Daniel Lovitz has a right foot and told him, you know, Daniel, shine that shoe up, put it in your display case, because you might never score a goal again.
There you go. I was just sad it wasn't in the air, so we could do Love It's in the Air.
Just funny once, story. Just did I ever tell you? I think I did, but Martin Stevens once sang at one of my golf tournaments, so that was hilarious.
Yeah, I have heard that story, so that is kind of funny, yes. Alas.
And my uncle told me, yeah, why don't you sing your hit? Your hit. Ah, that was so passive aggressive. I love you, uncle.
Sing the song. I was at a concert once where they were trying to play all their big hits, and one guy was at the front just going, sing the song. Yeah, anyway, concert stories with Dwayne, that's a different podcast altogether, and they'd be a little blurry because they're all from the 90s at this point. And I mean, because it's a long time ago. Also, I was probably drunk. Anyway,
also.
Yes. What are we talking about? Yeah, Daniel Lovitz. No, I mean, big win for Montreal. Big win for Montreal, because I mean, that turns it around right at that very end from being, just in a playoff spot to putting the foot on the throat of probably Toronto, Orlando, and Chicago, right? Well, especially Chicago, because they saw it right in front of them. And that's a big win, because all of those right now, 9 points, DFC, that was like, it was like a morgue where I was. I was actually at an annual event with some bunch of supporters. It was probably about 100 of us there that were watching this, all TFC, longtime TFC fans. And I don't remember a more mortgage result to a draw at the end of the day, because the math just doesn't make sense anymore, right? We'll talk about Toronto more at the point. No one expected Montreal to be a contending team this year, right? So anything they do is kind of a bonus. So it's unlike Toronto, again, who, if they make the playoffs, everyone's going to be okay. Or in playoffs, now fix the season by winning the cup. Montreal makes the playoffs, everyone's going to go, okay, that's your head of schedule, and let's just see what we can do and build on. And if you happen to win that first game, then people expect them to win. So it's big. New England doesn't look particularly great for me right now. DC United is charging, so I think it really, honestly, if I'm being objective in my analysis here, I think it's between Philadelphia, Montreal, and DC. One of those or two of those three teams is going to find their way in, and one is not. So I think that's what you have to look at. And, I'm still reluctant to completely write TFC out, but the math is just not there anymore.
And we'll get to Toronto in a second and the blunder of Bono that gave Wando a way to get only 3 goals closer to Lennon Donovan's record. But for Montreal, what you mentioned is true. And now Philly winning a game 2 on Saturday, Montreal had to keep up with the Joneses with that victory. Philly beating NYCFC in this weekend and getting a big 3 points against a very good team, a top three team in the Eastern Conference. And Philly had 33, and Montreal had to answer that by winning 2. And there was a feeling, Dwayne, in this game, because after Nikolic started, and I have to let you know, before when Montreal scored 4 minutes in, like, okay, this is Montreal. Montreal was dominating the entire game. I'm not saying it was a great game on any level. It wasn't a very good atmosphere at Stade Saputo. The fans were reacting to great plays, and not only goal-scoring chances, but that play that you see Piatti, like, on his baseline, literally, juggle the ball, give it to Lovitz. Lovitz going on a 40-yard run, then fighting tighter. The entire stadium got up and clapped and enjoyed that moment. The fans were really into it. And you had that feeling, okay, Montreal needs to score a second or a third one. You need to put this game away. Otherwise, too late. Nikolic scored and it's 1-1. We've seen this against DC. I've seen this movie before and it doesn't end well. Well, I guess this is a remake of that movie because Montreal was able to score the game winner late and Daniel Lovitz's first ever goal. And I texted my fiance about 20 minutes before the end of the game. I'm like, yeah, they're going to have one corner probably and they're going to score off of it. And I guess I should have put money on it because that's exactly what they did. But Montreal salvaged that point and you could see the commitment going forward from Montreal. You could see the pressure of the season, the pressure of the playoff, and the need of that second goal, the need of the 3 points, and they fed off of it. And both the manager and the players themselves mentioned that the crowd was a big part of the late push in this game.
Yeah, and, you know, to use our old saying, Montreal still has those games not in hand, the opposite of in hand, right? But games on the board, I guess, is how you'd say that. But points on the board are points in the pocket, and 33 points is something. I mean, DC's rolling right now, but they still have less points per game. Part of that's because they were horrible at the start of the year. You got to just believe for at this point. You just got to keep winning. As long as you keep winning, you're going to keep putting those pressure on there. And as I said, I think it was also important to put your foot to the throat, especially of a team like TFC, because I think everyone is going to be, the rest of the East is going to celebrate. There's going to be, fireworks go up the moment the Toronto is officially eliminated, because I don't think any of them want that as their first round opponent, right?
Yeah.
They've won 13 of their last 14 two-game series. You can't ignore that if they do get in. So, yeah, that it puts the throat on it because they were minutes away and both sides of it. They think about this, what switched in about a 10, like, obviously one happened much further, but in terms of the last few minutes of the game, you could have had, instead of Toronto being 9 points back, they could have been, they would have got two more and Montreal would have had two less, right? So there's a four-point swing there based on the end of the game, and that's significant.
And speaking of Toronto, they were traveling to the West Coast to play San Jose. San Jose, the wooden spoon of MLS, and I feel they're going to stay there. They're at 17 points now.
Good.
No, they're not very good at all. And one of their best players ever, Wondolowski, came off the bench. And I was thinking, I'm like, Wondolowski usually scores against Toronto. He usually plays really well against Toronto. They can't let him have one opportunity. 5 minutes later, nice through ball. They find Wondolowski streaking all alone. Terrible shot on Bono, but Bono gobbles it up. Wondolowski chips the rebound, and it's 1-1, and that's the way it's finished.
And look, Bono makes some spectacular saves, but he has thrown at least 6 or 7 points into the toilet this year for TFC, and I don't know why people don't make more big deal of this. And this is, I have never been as blind to Bono thing. I recognize that he makes big saves. He really does. He can be spectacular.
I face it. You always mentioned on the show that you didn't like Bono. Nothing to do with the player, the person, but the player himself. You always saw some deficiencies at some part of his game.
Well, and these brain farts and his keeper, that's kind of important. You can't, obviously every keeper in the world has made boneheaded plays at one point in the time. I mean, hell, Peter Cech almost passed the ball in his own goal against City 2 weeks ago, right? He didn't, but it was hilarious. It was so close. But at any rate, I'm sure the Buffon at some point in his life has coughed a ball up and it's been knocked in. Like, I mean, that happens, but they're in Bono's career, which is relatively short. I, at the top of my head, can think of 3 or 4 really bad errors that have directly led to goals. Okay, two on San Jose now. He's terrible against San Jose. His original blunder was against them. Then the Orlando one, he made his first shot on goal too. I mean, he basically coughed that up. And at this point in time, this is what I would say about the TFC game in a nutshell. It wasn't a horrific
performance,
result for them in performance. Yeah, it wasn't. But they've dug themselves such a hole that they have no room for error. If they were 4 points back or 2 points back and they got the single point and they're okay, well, they're 3 points back now, you'd be like, okay, it's not ideal, but we can deal with this. If they were well in the playoffs, no one even bat an eye. Okay, it happens. They got a point in the road. That's what they would have said. They got a point on the road on a short week flying across the country, which statistically speaking is very difficult to do. But they're 9 points back. They need 3 points. They have 30 points left now. They can get to 54. If they do that, they'll make the playoffs. But yeah. Is there any evidence that we have that Toronto FC is going to go on a 10-game winning streak right now?
No.
I mean, if they do, then everyone's going to be like, okay, they're the favorite again. But
and their schedule is not easy. Like, they're not facing easy teams. And it starts next Saturday. They're facing the Montreal Impact at home. And if you go back to 2017, Dwayne, there's one team that did beat Toronto in the regular season at BMO Field. And guess what? It was Montreal. And now Montreal is motivated with the idea of, look, we can pretty much kill a lot of chances of making the playoffs for Toronto if we win on the road. Because it gives us 36 and they stay on 24. And you're now talking about 12-point difference with Montreal at sixth position. So Montreal will be very motivated. They're always really motivated. But they will be for their game against Toronto at BMO Field. And when I look at the performance of a Bakary Sagna, who played really well, and nothing spectacular, but just that transition. And the words of Evan Bush after the game, he says, one thing that he always impressed by players coming in from Europe or from great tier one level across the world is not their tactics, not their athletics, and not necessarily the technique they have on the ball. It's the transition in the focus. As soon as they lose possession, they're already thinking defensively and thinking of the second move to do offensively. Bless you. And to think about the second move offensively if they have to transition. And when you got Bakary Sagna, that's exactly what he was doing. He was tracking back, perfectly placed when defensively they needed him. And when he took over the ball, he was restarting that attack very effectively too, linking up with Silva in front of him. So this could be a problem for TFC. Montreal's backline, when you look at it now, it was a question all year long if they could survive this season. Now they're all back pretty much from injury. And you got Daniel Lovitz having the best year of his career and the official first-choice left-back from Montreal. You got Camacho and Rodfani, a very good center-back pairing in MLS right now. And Bakary Sagna at right-back that has a resume that we can talk about for 20 minutes. And the motivation to help this team get a playoff spot. So this could be difficult for Toronto to get a result against Montreal at home.
This is probably the most significant game that the Impact have played in two seasons since the Eastern Conference Final in their mind. Because not only do they have the chance to play, you know, massive spoiler for TFC and basically eliminate them. They lose their, I mean, I'll say this. They have three of their next four games at home. Montreal, Portland on the road. Then the two LA teams come in on back-to-back weeks while there's the international break in between. But in those four games, if they don't have 9 points, then they're done. Absolutely. Mathematically, probably. So, you know, you could afford to lose this game and then win the next three. But does anyone really want to go into Portland absolutely needing a win? Probably not. Portland's pretty good at home. So, yeah, this is a big stretch here. And in terms of the Impact, like I said, it's a double whammy for them. Not only do they get to knock their rival down and, you know, kick them while they're down, but they also get to solidify their own playoff spot, which, of course, is even more important. So, yeah, is it the biggest derby since the Eastern Conference Final? Probably.
Yeah, since the 2016 in the Eastern Conference Final, yeah, it is the most important game when you look at what's at stake, yeah.
And probably the biggest regular season derby in few seasons at least. I mean, obviously they've opened the season a few times with them, but in terms of what it means for the season for both teams, I think that this one is a rare one that's going to come at a perfect time in terms of the importance. So yeah, it's a big game, and it's not like, but it's funny that from a derby perspective, from a TFC perspective alone here, it doesn't really feel like a derby. It's just another game they need to win. It's points, and they, you know, the fact that it's a rival that's going to be up for it is just complicates things. As I said, I mean, I'm not particularly – I have some money on TFC to win the MLS Cup, but it's not – you know, it was found money, and I'll be very well off if they win it. But I'm not particularly going to cash that check just yet, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah, you're very far away from cashing that check. And as always, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Laramie, and the show at Soccer Today SBN. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Soccer Today, talking about the world of football with a soccer perspective. And as always, until next time, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Laramie. Have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.